This is John and Nancy. I want to tell you a little bit about their story. John and Nancy met while they were in high school on a blind date. It's kind of one of those stories that you smile about when you hear it, especially many years later. John and Nancy didn't know each other, went to different high schools, and a friend thought that they would be great together. And both of them, for different reasons, at first were kind of hesitant to go on this blind date together. John had just gotten out of a really serious relationship with somebody else, wasn't really looking for a new relationship quite yet. But because he really liked his friend, he decided to go on a blind date, a double date with this couple. And as it turned out, John and Nancy went on this blind date together, really hit it off well, started talking, fell in love. And the rest is history. They dated through high school, even though they went to different schools. John was the pitcher on his high school's baseball team, and Nancy loved going to the games and watching her tall, dark, and handsome guy pitching for their high school team. They would date throughout high school, get engaged after high school, shortly before John left for the Army in 1953. They were married in 1952. John left in 1953, early that year, for Korea, and they would see each other only once in the next year and a half, as they spent the first several of their Christmases and holidays apart. Came back together after John's tour in Korea and built a life together. Had two boys and a loving family. This is a picture of them just before John shipped out to basic training. Stories like that always make me smile. Especially stories of long ago, decades ago, long marriages. They spent 65 years together. And that's something that, unfortunately, we don't see too much of anymore. It seems like more often we see folks struggling in their marriage, not quite making it that long. And these marriage stories that we hear about from maybe a generation or two ago are a treasure to us. And give us a map in a lot of ways for different ways that we could map our own marriage and our own relationships. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul talks about specifically husbands and how to have some of these enduring qualities of a marriage that lasts this long, of a love story that gets this kind of attention in later years, as John and Nancy's does. And he talks about husbands, love your wives. He starts out this section as he really is dealing with a whole host of other relationships. It's not just husbands and wives, it's children, it's masters and slaves, it's other people in the household that Paul is talking to. But he starts out by dealing with the husbands. And it's interesting to me as he talks about this, he starts into this example of Christ loving the church. And really, of all the relationships that Paul will deal with, he deals with most the husband's relationship to the wife. He spends the most time and attention on this one, giving it all of the time that he needs to. In fact, of all the other relationships, he gives it about three times the time and any other relationship that he's going to talk about in the next chapter and a half. He says, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church." And I read that, and sometimes those of us who had read that all of our lives miss what the significance of what he just said was. How did Christ love the church? He died for her, right? And Paul sets the bar as high as you can possibly get. Guys, I don't know if this intimidates you at all to read this. It should. Because he's saying there is nothing more important than Christ dying for the church, and like there's nothing more important than you sacrificing for your wife. Christ's whole purpose in being to come here to earth was to die for the church. And something we probably don't think much about, but that Christ, his entire life, understood his purpose. Can you imagine coming and knowing that your prime reason for existing is to at some point in your young years sacrifice yourself for the better of the world? That's your purpose. And so Christ's example to us in sacrificing himself for the church is carried over to husbands and what Paul says here in this passage, in husbands loving your wife. But he doesn't stop there. He goes on into detail to describe this relationship, both with Christ and the church, as well with husband and wife. He says that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. And this is kind of confusing to us because in our modern day marriage rituals, we don't have something like this any longer. But in the first century, it would have been common for a wife to have one last bath before her marriage. We're used to, I took a shower last night, you know. Most of us took a shower this morning, or hopefully within the last 48 hours, 72 hours. I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing some blank stares. Maybe this isn't connecting as well as I would hope. Sometime in the last week, let's put it like that. You took a bath, hopefully. And yet that was not the case in the ancient world. It would be long periods of time before they were able to get baths. And so for a woman about to be married, it was important, obviously, to have one last washing. And so Paul is comparing this really with the idea of baptism. He says, just like you are baptized in your walk with the Lord in Christ, example to the church in baptizing the church, so a woman will wash herself and sanctify herself, set herself apart for that special day with her husband, the day of her marriage. And Paul continues to make these connections throughout the rest of this passage with Christ and the church, saying, continuing on, he says, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy without blemish. So it's this kind of paradoxical relationship that Christ, having sacrificed himself for the church, also does it in order to sanctify the church so that she would be presented to himself blameless and holy. He says, this is how husbands are supposed to love your wives. The husband's job, Paul makes the argument, is about making his wife holy. Now, I don't know if husbands, you've ever thought about your role as a husband like that before. I think about my role as a husband, and I think about a lot of different things that I do as a husband. I think about providing for my wife financially, emotionally. I think about trying to help her out around the house with jobs and chores and things that she might do. But I don't often think about the idea, as Paul would say it in this passage, that your job, your role, is to make your wife holy. Husbands, are you making your wife holy? Is your wife better off for having married you? We talk a lot about marrying up as guys, right? That's something that often you hear about talked with guys and their wives. Yo, you married up. You did a good job. Pat on the back. And yet Paul would ask the husband, did she marry up? Could she say that about you? That she married well? Or does she constantly have to put up with your temper? Or your selfishness? Your absence? Maybe your negligence to help around the house with kids or other responsibilities? Did she marry up? Heard a funny story one time. It was a woman giving a lecture at a ladies' conference. She was talking about asking the audience of women who were married, how many of them wanted to mother their husbands? And one lady in the back row raised her hand and she said, oh, you would like to mother your husband? She said, mother? I thought you said smother. And we joke about this, right? How frustrating at times our spouses are, that we wish to, you know, smother them, or we just want to wring their neck, or we want to do things, and we say that in jest. And yet, sometimes the reality is, when we get home, that's really how we feel. Because there's unmet expectations in our lives of what we thought this was going to be like. What we thought a husband was going to provide, women, or husbands, what a wife was going to be. But guys, are you helping your wife see God more clearly in your relationship with her? Or does she have to rub the glass a little bit more? A little bit harder to get that reflection clearly of her relationship with the Lord. I believe this with all my heart. And more, the more I read about men and our roles in the families that we play, both with our wives and with our children, the more I'm convinced that guides the ability for you to parent and be a husband well to your wife and to your children goes a long way with their ability to see the Father more clearly. And when we are not able to, for whatever reason, connect with our wife or with our children, with our wife, helping her become more holy, or whatever it may be, with our kids, helping them grow into the godly men and women that we would like for them to be, when we are not able to do that, we leave both with scars. Not just in their relationships with us, but in their relationships with the Heavenly Father. Paul continues, he says, in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. And this is where the argument gets stronger, because he says essentially, if you didn't think that this was important, Christ loving the church, if this idea of being in a model and a role in this relationship that Christ has with the church in your marriage, you should at least love your wife because you love yourself. Of course, we love our own bodies. Paul is kind of playing on this understood knowledge that we all have, that we love ourselves. Maybe sometimes a little too much, but he says, in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. And so because of this, Paul continues in verse 31, making a reference to Genesis 2, the first marriage. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. The beauty of marriage is not just two people trying to make it in life. It's literally two people becoming one. Because now they're literally the same, one of the other. Husbands, Paul says, you should love your wife because they are now literally a part of you in your marriage. And the beauty of marriage and the sexual union is the giving up of self to become one. And I want to go a direction with this that is important, that I think is biblical. But I want you to hear me clearly about this. I'm not trying to suggest that in all ways, our relationship with our wives and the sexual union of a marriage is the same as our relationship with the Father. I don't think Paul would say the same thing about Christ and the church. However, he's hitting on something here that is foundational to our understanding of God and the relationship that God desires to have with us. If you remember, John chapter 17. Jesus is saying the high priestly prayer, one of the last prayers he'll make as he leaves the earth. And he prays for something in that prayer. He prays for us, for his disciples. And he says something in that prayer. He says that they may be one, even as you and I are one. And Jesus, at different points in the Gospels, models this unification of the Godhead, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, that they are one together. We often take effort to separate them, but the reality is, scripturally, God is one God. And these different expressions and elements of the Godhead are united together. And Jesus says, may our disciples be one, even as we are one. Just two chapters before that, Jesus will talk about being the vine and the branches. I am the vine, you are the branches, he says to his disciples. And the repeated phrase throughout that chapter is this phrase, abide in me. Be one with me. As God the Father and I are one, remain in me. Because we are members of his body, there's a unification that is expressed in marriage, that is a shadow of the unification that is expressed in God's relationship with his Godhead as well as with us, and the unity that they share together. This is why I believe Paul will get to the end of this, and he calls marriage a profound mystery. I don't know if you've ever used that phrase before to describe your relationship with your wife or your husband. It's a profound mystery. Say that next time somebody asks you, some young person comes up to you asking about marriage, tell them it's a profound mystery and see what they say. We'll watch the expression on their face. Not really the advice I was hoping to get. But isn't it though? I mean, isn't it really? Think about this. Two people, two very opposite people often, coming together for decades of their life. And if this is done right, they will spend more time together than they will ever spend apart from each other in their life. To the point that we have stories of couples dying moments apart from each other. Have you ever read these stories before? Heard these stories? Two people in a nursing home dying moments apart, days apart from each other, because they literally cannot live without the other. Such a profound mystery. Two backgrounds, two different expectations about life. Sometimes two value systems living together for a lifetime. And if blessed with children to raise functional human beings in that relationship, it's a mystery. And yet such a blessing. It seems impossible when we think about it. When we're standing here talking about it, as I'm sharing with you, it seems impossible to do. Because we are flawed people at our very core, aren't we? And yet, this is what God desires. I want to come back to this holiness metaphor of Christ sanctifying the church as Paul talks about it, because I believe it may be one of the most important things that Paul deals with in this passage. Christ sanctified the church, sacrificed for the church, set it apart as holy and special, so that He might present her holy to the Father. Husbands, your responsibility is to do what Christ did for the church and to make your wife holy. Are you making her life better because you're in it? Is her life more holy because of you? Or does she just want to smother you? Maybe a little bit of both. But husbands, if the lives of our spouses are not improved because we are a part of their life, we are doing something wrong. And we're missing the gift of our relationship to them. And we have failed the mission of Christ and what we are called to emulate. John and Nancy were my paternal grandparents. Some of you have heard me talk about them before. Before my grandfather died in 2017, my grandmother kept worrying about how she was going to live. I mean, we literally had conversations with her about basic fundamentals of existence that she wasn't sure she was going to be able to do anymore, because she either had never had to, or she was afraid she wasn't going to be able to with his support. We had to go help her pump gas again, go through the checkbook and order her bills. All these fundamental little basics of life that she had never wanted for, because she had always been in a relationship where her husband loved her and led her. He'd led her so well, in fact, it was almost as if she didn't know how to lead herself. He'd been a rock, and he loved her for 65 years. He died in April of 2017. She died in March the following year. She didn't have any health problems. She was healthy. Healthy as a horse the day he died. But I really believe that the reason my grandmother could not make it any longer in life physically was because she didn't know how to make it emotionally without her leader. I don't think she ever figured out how to do it without him. Her last year was a difficult one. As the family watched and struggled with her, trying to help her. But at some point, I just don't think she wanted to do it anymore. But what a sweet testimony to 65 long years together. Husbands, is your wife better for having known you? Nancy was. She would have told you that. And everybody around her could see it. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and made it holy. here in a moment as we conclude this series as well as this sermon. We're going to have a time of invitation. We always do this. And, you know, we don't often come forward for the things that we feel like maybe we should. And I want to encourage you, even if you don't decide to come forward this morning, that you think about this. Husbands and your relationships with your wives, think about this. And whether you decide to come forward and ask for prayers or not is your choice, but do something. Do something about it. But if you do decide, for whatever reason, maybe this related issue or something completely unrelated that you need prayers for, we are happy to help you in any way we can, and we invite you to come as we stand and sing this song.
The blessed tidings of